League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Milwaukee Brewers fans, your hometown team is leading the wild card standings coming into Monday's game against the Chicago Cubs after a really productive road trip. Yes, there was a game that people are going to be frustrated by, but 4-2 road trip in Cincinnati, in Washington, some of the craziest baseball you've seen this year. They managed to add to their roster significantly. A lot of new faces from outside the organization, three of them, as well as some folks from inside the organization. And it's going to be a super interesting home stretch. The Brewers still playing very good baseball. They've won 9 of 13. They are finding ways to win games that sometimes look like they probably should lose. And even though they have a bullpen hiccup here and there, Saturday being the case in point, they are they're still in charge of their playoff destiny, so to speak. The St. Louis Cardinals, a half game back coming into the week. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. That's what you're listening to right now. We're going to be joined in moments by Todd Rosiak. He's got lots of knowledge about this team. We was there in Cincinnati for that ridiculous game Wednesday, followed up by a pretty good extra inning game Thursday, for that matter. And, of course, he is observing what's going on with this team. We talk about the roster moves that have been made, the team acquiring Gio Gonzalez, Curtis Granderson, and Xavier Cedeño from outside the organization. They also brought up a bunch of new faces, Corey Knebel among them, Zach Davies, Keon Broxton had a huge three-run homer in the game Sunday as the Brewers rounded out a series win over Washington with a seven-run inning and a 9-4 victory. Speaking of Keon Broxton, we chat with him after we talk to Todd Rosiak. We get his thoughts. This is before he left the team last time. He was sent down. He actually had a child born and then came back to the team. He stayed, I believe he was optioned to Single-A Wisconsin so that he could kind of stay close to home. And now he's back with rosters expanded in September. So didn't talk about his new child, didn't talk about his baby, but we did talk about other things over the course of the season, sort of the what he faced at the beginning of the year when he was sent down and after being a big part of the major league roster last year. We talk about what it takes to steal home runs. The man has stolen a few of them, some big ones, three ninth inning memorable game savers, including one earlier this year that has made him such a highlight worthy center fielder. He was with the bat as well back in the lineup on Sunday and delivering a big home run. He's had a big triple earlier this year, so he's definitely been a key component for this team, even though he hasn't been with the big league roster all year long. Wanted to chat with him a little bit, so that is what we did. Let's start this conversation with the one and only Todd Rosiak. And here he is now, Todd Rosiak, one of the two Brewers beat reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He will be covering the Brewers against the Cubs, this big series beginning Labor Day at Miller Park. And Todd, it was probably the most, I think you could call it the most eventful week of the season for the Brewers. They went 4-2 on this road trip. They had a loss that a lot of people are excited about. They also had a couple wins that are basically, that were crazy, crazy games. And then, of course, they drastically supplemented their roster. They acquired three new guys, Xavier Cedeño, Gio Gonzalez, Curtis Granderson. They also called up a bunch of guys. So we're going to start there. We're going to start with some of the roster moves. Gio Gonzalez acquired from across the way at National Stadium from the Washington Nationals. I think the reason he wasn't put right away into the starting rotation, I think, has to do with timing. Since he pitched Wednesday, he wasn't going to pitch Sunday, where Junior Guerra, who's been struggling, was kind of the natural guy. They have not committed to when he's going to start. I'm curious what you think of that. I would think that Gio would be the guy that you look at to have the greatest impact in September, but without him having a start, that's sort of an unusual start to things. We might actually see him out of the bullpen, I guess.
Well, first of all, can you welcome me?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Welcome to the show, Todd Rosiak. How are you, Todd?
I'm great. I'm in a great mood. How are you?
I am great. I apologize that my first question was so wordy.
Jeez, you sound like me now.
You are not a wordy person.
Going on.
I will never accuse you of being too wordy, Todd.
All right. Gio Gonzalez. I think probably the best way to explain it would be kind of like buying a new car. I think you kind of want to get hands on first and see what's all there. You know, give him a little bit of time to situate himself, get familiar with his catchers, get familiar with Lee Tunnell, get familiar with Derek Johnson, Craig Counsell, and just kind of ease him in. I know there's not a lot of time left, and this doesn't need to be more than, probably a one appearance thing out of the bullpen. And, he could be making a start by the weekend. You just don't know. I would assume that will be the case. They'll try to just get his feet wet with that initial appearance and then slot him somewhere in the meantime. Junior Guerra's spot is going to be coming up again. And obviously he did not pitch well again today. You have to think that this is going to be the last, the last time we're going to see him in a starting role this year. So, they went out and got who many people considered to be the best starter available. And it's going to be interesting to see what he can do. He's certainly experienced. He's a veteran. He's been through the battles. Obviously has not pitched up to snuff this season. I'm sure he would admit that. But as he talked about, sometimes a change of scenery can be a good thing. Derek Johnson has done some good things with the Brewers staff to this point, and maybe he can tinker a little bit with what he sees in Gio Gonzalez and retool a few things and get him back on track, because there's no question the Brewers have a need. And, you throw a experienced left-hander into the mix like that, and it could be a good thing.
And they certainly didn't buy high with him, but a lot of guys who were all-stars in previous years, Gio is certainly one of them. Curtis Granderson was one of them. They got Mike Moustakas and Jonathan Scope at the last deadline. Those two guys obviously have all-star experience. So there is a lot of experience, a lot of talent. Do you agree with my assessment that Gio is kind of the most important of these three, that we'll see Granderson off the bench and Cedeno here and there? We've already seen him in a game. Or maybe as a lefty matchup guy with the way the lefty in there, Dan Jennings, has struggled. Do you agree that Gio is kind of the marquee guy, or do you think those other guys might have an even more prominent role?
Yeah, well, I think Gonzalez will be the premier guy here in the three additions. Then you working your way down the list, Cedeno would be next. I'm sure he's going to see a bunch of opportunities out of the bullpen, and he seems to be more like the traditional loogie. The Brewers have kind of shied away from those guys in the past. They like guys that can pitch whole innings, and I'm not saying that he can't, but with more arms in the bullpen now for September, he certainly could be a guy that could be more of a matchup, guy. And then Curtis Granderson will be, just kind of a veteran off left-handed bat off the bench. He'll make an occasional start in the outfield as he did today. And just kind of fill in the gaps where need be. I think there are three very low risk, low cost, potential high upside moves. They're not the sexiest additions, but they all fill needs on a team. And now there's a little bit less than a month left to see if these guys can actually fill the roles that they're going to be expected to fill.
Indeed, they were low-cost maneuvers, but not no-cost. And you've spent some time this year talking about some of these players. Some of them were with the Timber Rattlers, who went the other way in these deals. Demi Arimaloy, Gilbert Lara, and KJ Harrison are kind of the three names that are no longer with the organization. Any of those guys jump out at you as particularly surprising? It seems like those guys were just too far away to really judge where they might fit in the long-term picture. But you could even go back to the July deadline with Cody Medeiros. Luis Ortiz is probably the highest-profile prospect of the bunch. But did any of these guys surprise you that the Brewers were willing to move on?
No. I think in the case of Lara, it was probably, we talked about change of scenery. I think it was probably a good time for a change of scenery for him as well. If you go back to when the Brewers first signed him as a 15, 16 year old kid, you know, handing him $3 million. That was pretty much unheard of from the Brewers standpoint, and really their first big money foray into the, you know, the amateur market down there. And it didn't pan out. He battled injuries, inconsistency, immaturity. I went up to Appleton and talked to him at the start of the season. He had gotten off to a good start, and he pretty much admitted all that he was immature. And I mean, imagine being a 16-year-old and being handed $3 million. That's pretty crazy stuff. So, you know, he at least played a full season to this point with the T-Rats and leveled off quite a bit. His numbers weren't eye-popping, but again, at least he was out on the field and performing. So I think from the Brewers' standpoint, I don't think they thought that he was going to be up anytime soon and, you know, really advancing up that organizational ladder quickly. So, you know, you cut bait with him. KJ Harrison was a high draft pick last year, tore it up in Helena, and then this year really just could not get it going in Appleton and was for a long time, barely at his average over 200 and just was struggling. I don't know that, you know, he was drafted as a catcher, but he was playing first base and with Peyton Henry at Wisconsin, looking kind of profiling like the catcher of the future in the organization now. I don't really think they saw Harrison as a, you know, as a real viable candidate moving forward behind the plate. So, you know, they moved him on, and Oren Molloy was probably the most physically impressive and imposing prospect that they traded up to the deadline and then after here in the going into August, the August 31st deadline. You know, runs like the wind, big guys, got big power, but again, a very raw player. He's developing. He did get promoted to Carolina. Wasn't putting up great numbers, but he's one of those guys that has the potential. He's very much, I think, like Monte Harrison last year, where, you know, just the physical specimen alone, you know, if they're able to refine his skills and work with him more on his baseball skills, and he taps into that, he could be a really special player down the line. And he is a Canadian, so I'm sure going back to you know, playing for the Blue Jays is probably a pretty cool thing for him too. So you know, you got to give something up to get something, and the Brewers certainly did that. But I think if you look at all the trades they've made, all the moves they've made, including the up to the you know, the July 31st deadline, the Brewers are able to land a number of really good veteran players for not a huge prospect haul. If you look at it, you know, like you mentioned, Luis Ortiz, probably the highest rated prospect, and even I think anybody that follows this stuff would say that he's certainly no sure thing either. Just has not been able to stay healthy. You know, Brett Phillips, he's playing in Kansas City and he's doing okay, but, you know, not setting the world on fire. We hated seeing him go, but, you know, in order to add these the number of veteran players that they did, they really did not give up a whole heck of a lot. They did not have to touch their, you know, probably aside from Ortiz, anybody in their top 10. So that's obviously a good thing for the Brewers moving forward.
Yeah, I think even if you look at Phillips and Jorge Lopez going to Kansas City, I would bet in general there's probably one guy in that whole batch who's really going to end up having a good major league career. I don't even know if a great major league career. So yeah, I didn't see this as a huge setback to their farm system, even though there were a lot of names going the other way. So let's reach and touch the third rail of the week, bullpen usage. The story on coming out of Saturday's game is the team elected, of course, not to use Josh Hader in a key spot as the Brewers lost a 3-1 lead late after a 2-hour rain delay, wound up losing a tough 5-4 loss to Washington. We'll try to sift away stay away from sort of the fan reaction. I think we can all agree it's a good idea that the team is resting Josh Hader and trying to keep him as sharp as possible. But the comments from Craig Counsell, I thought there was an interesting subtext that I hadn't heard before. I think what he's trying to say without saying it is that the team just really doesn't like how he looks after he's worked a bunch of, you know, after he's coming back on short rest. It just, he's just not as effective. And they don't want to say that out loud and make, you know, maybe the player doesn't necessarily agree with that. But that's what I'm getting out of this. That's why Dan Jennings is the choice in these situations, is they just don't think Josh Hader bounces back the way other guys do. Do you think I'm reading too much into that?
Here's my take on it. It's a two-parter. Number one, if you remember back to last year, the guys that, that Craig Counsell was using most out of the bullpen, two names. I mean, let's take Carlos Torres out of the mix because he's not around anymore. He was a veteran. Two guys that got the most action out of the bullpen last year were Corey Knebel, Jacob Barnes. How are they doing this year?
Well, that's a good point.
Right?
Struggling big time.
So I would imagine that Craig Counsell, in his mind, you know, I don't know that he publicly would state this, but this is just a guess. This is just what I think. I think that he very well may be thinking back to last year and the heavy workload that both of those guys had, both young guys, like, you know, not quite as young as Hader, but inexperienced for the most part over the course of their careers, had not, neither one of them had endured a heavy workload. And look at where they are this year. I mean, who could have predicted Corey Knebel was going to go from all-star back to the minor leagues? You know, yeah. Jacob Barnes had a pretty solid year last year, and he was up in the top three in appearances, if I remember right, in the NL. Non-factor this year, up and down from the minors, back and forth, bouncing. So, you know, it's not to say that if Craig Counsell used Josh Hader 10 more times this season, that that would happen to him next year, but why risk it? I also get the fans' sentiment that, you know, last night, if there was ever a tailor-made time for Josh Hader to come into a game, that was it. You know, facing Soto, crazy inning there, Soria struggling, you know, coming off an off day, he'd only thrown 10 pitches the day before that. Let him face one batter. I mean, the odds are that he's going to get Soto out. But Craig Counsell and the Brewers have decided that they are going to treat Josh Hader with kid gloves, and understandably so. I get it, you know. I get that fans get frustrated with it, and Craig Counsell's explained it a million times. But, you know, where would the Brewers be next year if all of a sudden Josh Hader becomes this year's Corey Knebel? Where, you know, Josh Hader all of a sudden just totally loses his effectiveness and he's bouncing back and forth between the minors and the majors, or God forbid he gets hurt, then what, you know? So, I mean, anybody who follows baseball, anybody who covers baseball realizes that bullpen usage, that's the hot button issue. Everybody has the answer. Everybody's smarter than the manager. Everybody knows how guys should be used. I mean, give me a break. Craig Counsell, he knows what he's doing. People will argue that, but he knows what he's doing. He knows each of these players very well. They've seen what works for each of these guys. And Josh Hader, they're protecting him, and they think that he works better when he has sufficient rest. That's where it stays. And he's shown no inclination that he's going to change at this point. So people should just deal with it and move on.
Yeah, and another thought is, here they're coming into a series with the Cubs, and if he uses him on Saturday, maybe they get the out, maybe they don't. He was asking three different guys just to get that last out. Somebody should be able to get one out and then have Hader for one of those multiple inning stints, either in the finale, but more likely in this Cubs series, in games that sort of are more meaningful because they are against a direct competitor in the NL Central. So that's also another element to think about. Let's go back even further in time to Wednesday. This is a game you were at, this pure insanity that was this Reds game. 13-12, Brewers win in extra innings. Christian Yelich hits for the cycle. There's the bunt controversy that leads into a three-run homer by pitcher Michael Lorenzen for the Reds. Brewers were down four at that point. They come back. Aguilar home run, Moustakas home run, both clutch moments. What are you going to remember about this game? Because this game is insane.
I honestly forgot most of what you had just mentioned between that. Oh, maybe it's because I didn't go to bed until 4 a.m. and they had to get up at whatever it was, 8 to cover the day game the next day, which, by the way, also went extra innings, won 11 innings instead of 10.
Do they have cots at the press box just in case?
I was joking. I should have just stayed there. Had I known before I left for the ballpark, I would have just packed my bag and checked out of the hotel and just stayed there in the press box. But to go back even further, I was also the lucky one who covered the 15-inning game last Friday, the previous Friday at Miller Park. So
congratulations.
I was running on fumes by the time I got out of Great American Ballpark on Thursday early evening. And I know people roll their eyes, how can you guys complain about covering baseball and all that? Trust me, it's a lot of hours. It's very stressful. A lot of stuff going on. So that game that night in Cincinnati was just bonkers from start to finish. And to me, obviously the thing that's going to stick out the most is just the Yelich thing, the six hits, the cycle. It was cool to see, incredible to see. That was the third cycle I had seen in person. I saw the Chad Moeller cycle when I was a fan back in 2004. And I covered the Aaron Hill cycle when he was with the D-backs. I think it was in 2012, I want to say, at Miller Park. And crazily enough, that was his second cycle in like a week, if I remember right.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yes, crazy.
Yeah, so, but to see it done by a Brewer while working and in a, a six-hit effort on top of that in just a crazy game that they needed to win, it was really something to see. And afterwards talking to him, I give him a lot of credit because he certainly has the right to make it about him after a game like that, and it was never once about him. It was always about, yeah, we needed this win, this is a huge win for us. And that's where the focus remained for Christian Yelich. So I give him a lot of credit, but that was definitely a crazy game. And I would say that the two craziest games to this point this season were the 15-inning one at Miller Park and that one. And as I said, I had the fortune or the misfortune to cover both of them. And it was, the work aside and the stress aside, it was cool to be there for both of them.
He had hit two home runs the night before in a 9-7 loss. First time he'd done that. First time he hit for the cycle. Before the road trip was over, he had also hit his first grand slam. That happened on Sunday as part of a 7-run inning that turned the series finale game on its head. Brewers now 5-0 in series finales, where Stephen Vogt runs the card out to the umpires before the game. So that the day game narrative has sort of gone away. But as far as Christian Yelich's MVP chances, we kind of talked about it in relation to Lorenzo Cain, and Cain should probably still be in this discussion, but realistically he's not, and it's really just, and Yelich is kind of on the fringes still. You've got Javi Baez, you've got Matt Carpenter, who I think right now is the heavy favorite if the Cardinals make the playoffs. You've got, Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, do you think realistically Yelich is going to get into this conversation, or do you think there's still going to be way too many other candidates?
I don't know that I agree with your statement that he's on the fringes of this anymore. I think that he's done so much in the last week to 10 days. Obviously, he's got to keep it up. I mean, I'm not saying he's got to hit for the cycle every other week or something, but I think he's done enough here with the crazy games that he's had recently that he's gotten himself on the radar of more people. I'm seeing him spoken of more as a more serious candidate on MLB Network and ESPN and that sort of thing. And voters, I think, are taking notice. And never underestimate the power of the Brewers' social media campaigns too. I mean, they'll certainly do a great job of getting the word out and, trumpeting his achievements. But, as you mentioned, it's going to be interesting. Could we have the top three finishers for the NL MVP all be from the Central Division? It's very possible.
I mean, they are the three best records right now.
Yeah. I mean, Carpenter's playing out of his mind. Baez is just having an incredible year for the Cubs. And Yelich's numbers, you put him up against anybody, and if he wins the batting title or finishes in the top two or three, that obviously works to his advantage as well. So it's going to be a very interesting last month. If a team surges, if the Cardinals suddenly kind of run away with that top wild card spot, obviously the Brewers overtook them today, or you know, the Brewers go on some crazy run and Yelich is right in the middle of it, then obviously, you know, that guy's going to bolster his resume down the stretch. But all I can say is I'm glad I don't have an MVP ballot this year. Sounds weird to say, but it's a very stressful thing to do. There's a lot of preparation that goes into it. You know, I think most voters take it the same way. You know, I spent hours and hours last year and all the years that I voted for it, researching it and laying out different scenarios and this and that. And it's a very stressful thing, but, I'm not even sure who has MVP ballots for the Milwaukee chapter, to be honest with you. I'm assuming Tom has one. Adam McAlvey may have the other one. I'm doing Cy Young this year. So, I'm glad I don't have to make that decision this year, because I think it's going to be another tough call.
Cy Young's no picnic either, between Aaron Nola and Max Scherzer among the top candidates, but there's probably going to be others who get in the mix here too in September.
Jacob DeGrom would be in that mix.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's right there. Those three guys, very tough to choose between them at this point.
Yeah.
So it feels, as we head into this Cubs series, it feels like that NL Central ship has sailed for the Brewers. They're still five games back, even as well as they've played. Doesn't feel like anybody's catching the Cubs. Is there anything, though, that could happen in this Cubs series that might make you... I mean, obviously, if they win all six games remaining against the Cubs, they're going to be right back in it. I think that's a little unrealistic, but are you expecting that the Brewers still have a shot to get into the NL Central race, or is this about the wild card?
I mean, Javi Baez could break his leg. John Lester could blow out his elbow.
The Cubs would still be way up there, man. Yeah. They got so many people.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it. I mean, obviously you wouldn't wish that on those guys, but I think the more realistic path at this point is going to be the wild card. It's also the more tenuous path, as we know, but, you know, the Cubs have shown no signs of crumbling under the pressure. And why would they? Why should they? They've been through this the last several seasons. And, you know, they're healthy. They have all kinds of, you know, obviously Joe Maddon, tons of experience, and Moxie with the management and all that stuff. So I just don't see a scenario where the Cubs just all of a sudden collapse here over the last month and the Brewers are able to overtake them. So I think the Brewers just have to keep that mindset of just winning series, and try to knock off the Cubs as many times as possible in those six remaining games and kind of let the chips fall where they may.
All right, before we get out of here, tell me what you've got coming up this week. Are you working on anything, or is it just going to be about covering this next series?
I was putting some finishing touches. The minor league season, regular season ends this coming week, and I had planned on doing kind of a wrap up thing, just the level by level, but I shelved that. I'm going to do that maybe in a couple more weeks to give a little bit of time, so all the playoffs are done and everything like that. I did a little, not quite in depth because I wasn't able to talk to the kid, but I'm doing a story on a pretty interesting guy that the Brewers signed this summer by the name of Jolun Zhao. He is a 17 year old now. They signed him when he was 16 years old from Beijing, China. And, you know, we're all used to seeing all these signings, these amateur signings every summer from Dominican and Venezuela and so forth. This kid is a product of one of MLB's academies over in China, and a guy that was scouted by Taylor Green and Jeff Bianchi, two names that Brewer fans are certainly familiar with, are now in the scouting ranks for the Brewers. They scouted him over here, and he was playing in the Cal Ripken Collegiate League on the East Coast. So he's a 16-year-old kid playing against Division I college players and acquitted himself pretty well. So the Brewers signed him and put him down in Arizona for a few months to try to get him acclimated to the pro game. He's finishing out the season here in Helena, actually. So he's just turned 17 last week, and he's pitching in Helena, just pitched today. So I had a chance to speak to the Brewers International Director of Scouting, Michael Groupman, about this youngster, and just kind of the backstory about how they got onto him and, you know, his repertoire and all that sort of thing. So I'll be having a feature on him online Tuesday and in the paper Wednesday.
Very good. I'm thinking off the top of my head this minor league with the minor league system rolling down. I'm guessing Corey Ray is probably the team's organizational player of the year, and the pitcher of the year maybe Zach Brown. Are there other guys I'm forgetting?
Yeah, no, I think it'll be a pretty clean sweep there by Biloxi. Ray and Brown are the two no-brainers to me, and pretty cool for the Brewers from the standpoint that these are two guys that they drafted very high just a couple of years ago, and are living up to the hype for sure. People, detractors will point to Corey Ray and say, oh, he strikes out too much and he only is hitting, 238 or whatever it was. But I mean, look at the rest of his numbers across the board. They're phenomenal. And, Zach Brown, he had a little bit of a blip last month, had an ankle sprain, which forced him to miss a few starts, but he's put up phenomenal numbers as well. And that's a guy who went basically from not being really on the fringes of the top 30 to all of a sudden being one of their top pitching prospects. So, yeah, I think those two guys are pretty much no-brainers as far as the Brewers player and pitcher of the year in the minor leagues. The only other guy I would say off the top of my head is Corey Ray is the runaway guy for me, pitcher of the year. Cam Regner had a very good year in the minor leagues, and he's actually bounced between three levels. He started at Carolina and went up as high as Colorado Springs. He's kind of bounced back and forth, and as a result, his numbers weren't as great as that start that he got off to for the first 6 weeks of the season, where he was just like pitching out of his mind. But that's another guy that kind of was not on the radar and really has put himself on the radar screen with the way he pitched this year.
Todd Rosiak, you can read all of his material at jsonline.com. Lots to discuss this week with the Cubs coming to town and the home stretch. The Brewers in first place in the wild card race coming into Labor Day. It's going to be an exciting finish as promised. Todd, thanks for joining us.
JR, I cannot wait for our next podcast.
I know it's true. See you later, man.
See ya.
Moving on now to our conversation with Keon Broxton, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's had some outstanding plays in the field. He's had a few big hits, including Sunday, a three-run homer that gave the Brewers the lead and played into a seven-run inning that turned the tables and helped the Brewers take care of the Washington Nationals, win the series 2 out of 3. So wanted to catch up with Keon. Here he is. My guest is Keon Broxton, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. You may know him from his game-saving catches. That's certainly one of the things that comes to mind when I'm thinking about your career, Keon. So just are there mechanics to making a catch at the wall like that? Is that something you've worked on or drilled, or is that just something that kind of comes up in the moment? You just take it and happens to work out?
It's a little bit of both. Throughout my childhood, I was always active in sports and playing all different types of sports, baseball, football, basketball, every sport you can think of. So just going through those sports, especially in football, I was a receiver, so jumping up and catching balls is a big part of that aspect of the game. So just doing that kind of carried over into baseball. You see the ball up, you catch it at its highest point, and that's what, robbing a home run is really, is just catching at its highest point where you can catch it before it gets past the point of the wall and then I come down with it. So that, and working on it during spring training too, and finding a wall and being able to time your jump is huge. That's probably the main aspect of the whole thing, is getting back to the wall and timing your jump. So yeah, it's a little bit of both, just childhood experiences and working on it during spring training.
Is it something you've done in the minor leagues too? You've been able to, and not even just catches at the wall, but just being a flashy type outfielder, is that something you kind of pride yourself on through the minors as well?
Yeah, my defense has always been a strong suit of my game, so I've always been able to make plays and make things happen out there, so I just like to keep up with it and be consistent.
So you mentioned the football. I mean, if I read correctly, I mean, you could have possibly pursued football in college and everything. How tough of a decision is that? What was that like? And I mean, do you ever think about what it would have been to have gone that different route?
Yeah, I think about it sometimes. But I definitely know that I chose the right decision by playing baseball. Baseball's just, way better for a human being in its own But, I miss it. And I think about it too, like, especially when I'm watching on Sunday football.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, it probably would be pretty fun to be out there right now.
For
but,
sure, yeah.
But, yeah, I wouldn't go back and go play football, though, over doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. What, just overall this season, what's it been like for you? I mean, you've probably been asked about this a lot, having to go down to AAA. I don't even know at the beginning of the year. I'm assuming you knew you had an option left, but there was some mystery as to that as well. Did you have that understanding of your roster status coming into the season?
Yeah. Once we made the moves, I kind of already had a general idea of what was going to happen.
Sure.
That was definitely a tough time, but you know, you got to move on. You got to keep progressing to be as good as you can in the game, and things will take care of itself.
Well, I've heard a lot of people refer to you as a streaky player. I don't know if that's, I guess in some senses that's pejorative, and in some sense it could be a compliment. Do you look at yourself as a streaky player? Is that something you think is fair or unfair?
I definitely am a streaky player. I don't want to be, but I'd rather be streaky than just not good, you know, so... definitely gonna take the positives, but I am trying to be a little bit more consistent. And over the past couple months, I think I've become a little more consistent on a daily basis. So I'm just taking steps in the right direction.
So again, going back in time, you decided to go to junior college after. Were you taking the 29th round out of high school? Do I have that right?
Or yes.
Okay. So what was the decision like to go JUCO? Because then it gives you, I guess, a tighter time window before you could get drafted again. But what was that decision? Was that a no-brainer at the time for you, or was there a lot that went into that process?
I think once I got drafted, I was just like, okay, I definitely want to pursue baseball and stick with baseball. But I wasn't quite ready to just go straight to the minor leagues and start the whole entire process. And I just wasn't offered enough to, you know, take me away from college at that point in time. But I did know that I wanted to play baseball only, so I wanted to go to a JUCO so maybe I could get drafted again the next year, which I did, and it was in the third round, which was definitely where I wanted to be.
And then what do you remember about getting traded to the Brewers organization? What was that time for you?
I was excited. The Pirates, I was kind of in the same position I am right now. Kind of a log jam a little bit. So I was definitely excited to come over and get a pretty good opportunity.
So I've read that you have three Jack Russell Terriers and that you actually fly with them. How does that work? That has to be tough.
It's exciting. It's really cool. They kind of have the whole process down now, so they just chill and they kind of like it. I actually have four now.
Oh man, okay.
Yeah.
You got a whole family, man.
Yep, my male dog and my female dog, they had kids probably about a month ago, and they have five. So yeah, a couple of my friends have them around here. And a couple other random people that came in and bought them too. So
there's like a Keon Broxton Foster network where they take care of them during the season and stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. What are their names?
I have G, Miley, and Mello. And then the little puppy that we kept out of the litter, his name is Bubby.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's cool. And, I mean, are they with you at any point during the baseball season, or do you have to just...
I have them right now.
Oh, okay. They're with you in Milwaukee?
Yeah, they're
sure.
With me.
Well, that's
right now.
Great.
Yeah.
And then I also read that you were big into skateboarding growing up. What's sort of your relationship to that now? Is it something you're able to pursue at all, or is it something you kind of have to leave in the rearview mirror?
I've kind of left it in the rearview mirror, but every time I see a skateboard, I hop on for a little bit and do a couple tricks and then just hop off.
Sure.
And definitely watch the X Games still. So
Yeah,
so it's still like, it still catches my eye. I just haven't really had the time or opportunity to go and pursue it at any point.
So you fractured your wrist a couple years ago. Did that leave any lasting impact? You hear sometimes guys really struggle coming back from that, how it affects their power and their swing and things like that. Did you experience that, or was it a pretty easy, you know, recovery process?
Yeah, I definitely did. That's one of the reasons why I had to move my hands back up, is because, you know, my wrist just wasn't working quite like it was the year before. And the strength wasn't there. The mobility still isn't quite there yet. And doctor said it'd never be the same than it was. So just getting my hands in a good position where they can fire is really a big deal. So, it hindered me a little bit. And I had to reteach my wrist how to hit again. So it's been pretty difficult. It hasn't been easy, but I'm finally starting to get to a consistent basis to where I'm swinging it well, the ball's coming off the way it should be, and getting really comfortable with it. So it's coming back.
one of the things that I remember about just your hitting is the exit velocity was always really high. And I don't, it seems like now that's something that's talked about more in the minor leagues. For you coming up, was that a terminology that was ever used? Was there an emphasis on launch angle, or are you kind of, is that kind of too late for you?
No, I never heard about it until I made it to the big leagues a couple years ago, and that's when they really started talking about launch angle and exit velo and stuff like that. And to be on the top of the list was really cool to me. I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, that's it.
I was in between some top name guys, you know. I was like, wow, okay, guess it does come off hotter than I thought. So it was pretty cool, man. I think that's really cool.
All right, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
That's all we got for today, the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We'll be back with you again next week. There's a lot to discuss as the Brewers make this home stretch push, guys. They are a playoff team at this point, looking very promising. I got to tell you, from a fan standpoint, it has been very stressful. A lot of high wire act victories. Yes, this game on Saturday was tough to watch. I had trouble watching it myself, but the overall picture continues to be extremely promising. It's kind of nice, too, from a fan perspective, to see the Dodgers take the lead in the NL West. So now the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are those teams that are going to be chasing for a wild card spot. Dodgers are just so scary, so much talent, amazing run differential. I mean, this is absolutely a playoff team that has just found a way to underachieve this year. So that is a team that I would be very worried about if they were in the wild card chase. But as of Monday, they are back in charge of the NL West by the slimmest of margins, and will be battling surely with both of those aforementioned teams for the West the rest of the year. The Brewers hope that the two teams that don't win that race don't end up competing for that wild card spot and bumping the Brewers, because right now they are in charge a half game ahead of the St. Louis Cardinals. One last reminder before you go, jsonline.com/deal. We are still running our Labor Day sale. Excellent deals available to print subscribers, digital subscribers, whatever your flavor. That's the place to go. You can get 3 months if you're a new subscriber, 3 months of the Journal Sentinel Digital Access for $1. It's a crazy good deal. That's a 97% savings for 3 months. So be sure to go to jsonline.com/deal and get your Labor Day sale, man. That's what Labor Day is for. It's for good sales. It's for barbecue. It's for watching baseball. And that's what's going to happen this week and beyond. The Milwaukee Brewers. Just, I think they need to go, if I recall, 13-11 the rest of the way. They'll have 90 wins, matching that 2008 team for the second most in franchise history. So the Brewers have an opportunity in front of them. Thanks for tuning in. My name, again, J.R. Radcliffe. Thanks to Todd Groziak and Keon Broxton. We'll chat with you again real soon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.